I'm Alan Hardy.
Hi, this is Matty Cash.
Hi, I'm Darren Fletcher.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Welcome to the home of the oldest professional football club in the country.
The expectation of the fans now is to be talking about promotion.
As a team, as a squad of players, we've come a long way.
Goals from Jason Cummings and from Kieran Dowell in that match.
The City Ground's got that special buzz about it.
Obviously, it's such a big club and the fan base is massive.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome back to Over the Trent here on University Radio Nottingham, your podcast bringing you all the happenings from Meadow Lane and at the City Ground as well. My name's Joe Tanner. I'm joined in the studio today by Liam Kenny. Now we're going to be discussing everything that's happened over the last 3 or 4 weeks since we've been off for the Easter break during the university holidays. We're going to start by playing an interview for you that we conducted earlier this month with Notts County Chairman Alan Hardy.
We have to develop and encourage and try and build that next lot of supporters.
We also spoke to Elliot Stanley from the Nottingham Forest Supporters Trust about the rumours surrounding owner Evangelos Marinakis, which came to surface recently.
Both the legacy allegations that were dropped this week and the new allegations that have come to light, I think he makes a number of very telling points, also clarifies a number of things. I think there's certain media reports that are a little bit inaccurate.
And we'll be playing you all the highlights from the press conferences over our Easter break. Tendai Dariqua, Joe Lolly, and of course Aitor Karanka, along with Danny Fox, were at the Forest press conferences, along with Lewis Alessandra, Shola Amiobi, and of course the gaffer Kevin Nolan at Notts County as well.
It's about keeping them standards now, you know, and not letting them slip, and making sure that we do what's needed for Saturday to keep this winning run going.
So, Liam, lots to get our teeth into over this podcast after a very, very long absence here on University Radio Nottingham. We're going to start with all things Notts, who've had a bit of a resurgence in League Two. Two wins, back-to-back wins for the first time since, I believe, September, wasn't it?
September. Yeah. When they were having their great run, which led to Kevin getting the Manager of the Month award. You say, you know, it has been a resurgence, but credit to them, they have dug in there. If you put that into perspective, they've not won back-to-back league games since September, which really makes the points that they've been picking up away on the road seem a lot more vital. They're still fourth or fifth, I think, fifth as we talk, but to still be in and around the mix with that sort of dismal record, if you like, of not having the back-to-back wins, really does sort of prove how vital those away draws are.
Yeah, fifth in the league currently, 63 points, playoffs hopefully all but confirmed, although you never know with three games to go in Sky Bet League 2 before the playoff games commence. But who's been really key to those in those two games that Notts have won? Who's been really key? Of course, Jonathan Fort has been a bit of a revelation in those, especially getting a brace against Coventry.
Yeah, and I think that's a bit of a lesson to be learned for Kevin Nolan. There's a lot of fans and people involved with the club have been clamouring for Fort to be involved for a very long time, ever since it became evident that, you know, the pace of Johnstead and Amiobi is just not going to cut it when they're up front together. And I think now with Johnstead, he's sort of been missing out the team for the last few weeks. The relationship between Amiobi and Fort has really come to one, and it's sort of strange why you think he hasn't sort of relied on him before, because as I say, people have been crying out for him in games, and for whatever reason, maybe he wasn't fit, or maybe there was a falling out. And you know, because obviously they bought Mason Bennett in January, and he's sort of a pace merchant as well, so it looked like he was going to go out to Chesterfield himself, I think, Jonathan Fort, but he was obviously kept in the squad, and it was maybe a blessing in disguise that it happened, because obviously he's winning matches right now.
Yeah, kind of a odd selection choice, or odd lack of selection really, for all season long for Kevin Nolan, because you'd think in many ways he'd be the obvious kind of complement to Amiobi, you know, being that he's left-footed, you know, very powerful strike, and obviously a little bit pacier than Amiobi, who's in the twilight of his kind of career, more sort of on his future at Notts County coming up later in the podcast, which we're going to discuss as well. But, you know, Fort's an experienced player in the lower divisions too. It's kind of as you say, a bit of a mystery that he hasn't really been picked more often.
It must stem down to an attitude issue or just a personal issue between the two of them, because he's done a job. But then again, when Kevin Nolan first took over last season, Fort played consistently and played quite well. He obviously just didn't decide overnight that he didn't fancy him, but as you say, it's got to be down to an issue of attitude, or maybe as we were going through the season and it became apparent that Stead and Amiobi were the preferred two, maybe his head dropped in training and you know, as Kevin's told us many times, that's not going to get you back in the team.
Just looking at the team more broadly though, of course, if we look at the last sort of five games, of course that started with that horrendous defeat away at Chesterfield, 3-1, where, you know, the game was on Sky. It was the feeling in the camp after that match was one of the sort of low points of the season, really, it's got to be said. But in the space of five games, they've really turned it around and now are looking favourites really to get into those sort of playoff places in League Two, ready for the business end of the campaign. It's surely something psychological that Kevin Nolan seems to have racked into the players. I mean, there's been times in the season where you felt that the run's been very good, but there's been this habit of getting a little bit complacent at times, especially like we saw in January and just over the Christmas period after a very, very, very good first half of the season, which nobody expected, of course. Do you think that kind of complacency will be something that Nolan's going to be warning his players against going into the last couple of games?
Well, I think they've hit it at the right time. They've hit the form at the right time. As we said, they've won back-to-back games in a row now, and even before that, since the live on Sky defeat to Chesterfield, but they really were flat. Probably up there with the worst performances of the season, and whether it was a bit of stage fight or just a bit of nerves, because I remember going into that weekend of games, it was really dubbed as a must win for Notts County, and there was a sort of a feel good factor coming back, because obviously the week before, of course, Mansfield equalised with the 98th minute penalty, so they would have gone into that game and maybe a bit of frustration was for hanging over from the Mansfield game. But then after that, they went on to draw at Wickham, of course, at home. Wickham were doing in great form at the time. But once again, they should, if you're going to go up in the automatics, you're going to need to win that game. But as they've drawn it, it sort of consolidated the playoff position. Then they went away to Stanley and lost 1-0. Obviously, Stanley at the moment, quite untouchable, so there's no shame in that, so to speak. But then the real crucial one was the Coventry game, because obviously they're a playoff rival and it was a real six-pointer, and for Jonathan Forte to score both goals there, and the character they showed after Coventry equalised in the 85th minute, County scored again in the 86th, and it was a sort of moment that might be define the season, if you like, that we're not having this, you know, we do really want to go up in these playoff positions.
And late goals as well has been such an Achilles heel for Nolan's team over the last sort of couple of months or so, really, in the lead up to the end of the season. But nonetheless, a fantastic win there against Coventry, and a fantastic win last week against Colchester as well. You know, nobody really saw that coming. Colchester kind of limbering around in mid-table, not really masses to really play for, but nonetheless a really good result, and you know, great to get three different scores on the score sheet as well.
Yeah, and only four shots on target in total for Notts County, and they got three goals out of that, and if you play like that every game with that sort of efficiency in front of goal, you won't lose a lot of matches or even draw them. But yeah, they really, it was a textbook away performance that we were used to seeing at the start of the season. I think they went away and beat Lincoln 4-1, or they might have beaten them at home 4-1, but it sort of reminded me of that performance where it was almost a smash and grab. The Colchester result, I think, now going away from home and winning after a good home win against Coventry sets up this game against Yeovil for a perfect hat-trick of wins that will all but confirm a playoff position.
Yeovil in 18th position, probably just about clear of relegation, but nonetheless a game that is certainly winnable for Kevin Nolan's team. Now on to the first of two interviews this week on the podcast, this one with Alan Hardy, the chairman of Notts County, of course. Zoe Burgess, our correspondent, spoke to Alan earlier in the month about all things Twitter, all things ownership at Notts County, and how things are on the pitch going into the last stages of the season.
First one, how have you found your first year here at Meadow Lane, and how does it feel to own a football club?
Considering this is my first venture into football, then it's been a real roller coaster of emotion, something which I never anticipated would reach the heights and the lows and my life feels now like it's permanently in a state of emotion. So just done my weekly column with the Evening Post and just talking about tomorrow's game. It's just so exciting. And that's something that excitement you don't get when you're working in corporate land. Tends to be much more smooth. You get the small highs and lows of winning contracts or losing contracts, but nothing to the extent of the real massive emotional ride. And I think that's probably the biggest surprise I've had is how much the emotion of it all just drags and sucks you in.
So is it what you imagined, or?
No, not at all. On the emotional side, it's far less structured and more passionate than the business world, and decisions are made very much more in the moment, as opposed to planning strategically over a 3, 6, 12 month period. You tend to make decisions very much on a week by week basis. So, my job is to try and stay as level-headed as I can, but it's really difficult because sometimes I'm the one who is at the heart of all the emotional turmoil in some ways. So I have to make sure that I try and stay as level-headed as I can, but it's really difficult. And especially when you're on the back of a real good winning run, or you lose a couple of games you're expected to win, like we lost last week in Chesterfield. So Sunday night wasn't great last week. The week before was Mansfield. I was supposed to be going out for dinner with some friends, and I just couldn't go. I could not go out for dinner. It was I was so disappointed, so gutted that Mansfield got the last minute equaliser, that I was just too distraught to. I'd been no company whatsoever, and it would have been supportive for the others.
So with that emotion, do you think you see this as more of a passion than a business, or a bit of both? Or?
No, it's very much a business. It has to be, because the amount of money involved. But I am very aware that I'm only the custodial owner. I don't feel like when you own a business, you feel like you've got it for life, and that you have, whilst you put your own mark and your own stamp on the culture and the ethos and the environment you're trying to create. I'm very much aware that Notts County will exist long after I exist. I'm very much here as somebody who is holding the reins, and I'm taking them on a journey which hopefully leads them to a better place than when I started the journey. Now, I'm very much aware that I'm just in here as almost like not a temporary situation, but it's not something which I will own for life. Because I also don't believe that that's in the best interest of the club or the business. It has to have fresh ideas, fresh energy, fresh passion, fresh people who are at the heart of driving that success.
So with the notion of it being fresh, last summer you added several members to the board, and one of them was Darren Fletcher. What's your relationship with him, and what's he added to the club?
It's become a cross between my best friend and my right-hand man. So we talk on average 3 times a day. The relationship, well, we always had a good relationship, but it's become a very good relationship and a very truthful one. So his job is to challenge me and challenge my decision-making, and I will bounce ideas off him. His knowledge of football and players and being around football environments is incredible. His telephone book is phenomenal, and he will be taking calls constantly from people like Steven Gerrard and etc. etc. So he knows how footballers think and behave. So whilst we have our own sports scientists and psychologists, he has a different take on how footballers think. So we have psychologists from a textbook's point of view, and he sees it from a player's point of view, and from a manager's point of view. So he's got extensive experience of how to communicate with managers and how they like to be at the focal point of lots of decisions. So I'm very much used to being in a business where I make the calls and I make the decisions and I drive the agenda. Myself and the manager are almost like equals. I look after the stuff off the pitch, he looks after the stuff on the pitch. So that's a learning curve for me, the fact that I have to very much sit back and not try and influence what happens on the green grass.
Moving more towards the football side, Kevin Nolan often talks about people not expecting County to have been as successful as they have been this season. Do you think the team's overperformed, or do you think the management team have got the best out of a good group of players?
I think both. From the time he came in January to the end of the season, his form was third in the league, if he was to compare all the points gained in that period. So we were certainly, when we started on the journey in January through to the end of the season, we were obviously really, really surprised, and I suppose immensely grateful that what the players had done and the hard work they was putting in. So they were on the back of 10 straight losses. So fresh ideas, fresh energy had come in from Kevin. His management team did a brilliant job. And the players just responded fantastically to that. So much so that we got to that equivalent to third place in terms of form. Our agenda was always to consolidate this season. Mid-table, mediocrity was absolutely fine. You know, we didn't expect to be anywhere near the automatic playoff, automatic promotion, or in the playoffs. We wanted to stay out of the relegation area. Let's consolidate this year, and let's get the foundations right. When you're growing a business or you're growing a football team, the first thing you've got to do is to make sure the foundations are solid. You can't build anything on sand. So this season was about getting players in who was going to give us 2 years or 3 years of good solid service, who would give us the spine of the team in order that we can then start building some flair next season. So they've certainly surpassed all of our expectations. But we shouldn't really be surprised on the basis that last season was third on form and this season we're third straight fourth on form. So the management team really have got the best out of players. And I think the fact they very much enjoy the training sessions, they enjoy the journey, they enjoy the new atmosphere and the relationship with the manager. It's like anything, if you're enjoying the job that you're doing, if you're enjoying the course that you're on, then you get the best out of you.
Do you think the automatic and playoff places will be decided on the last day of the season? And does it make it more exciting or is that more stressful?
I've always had a sense that there'll be something to play for one of the teams. So there'll be something on the Luton game. Whether it be us cementing our place in the automatics, or whether it's as high as we can in the playoffs, or whether it's Luton going for the championship, but my sense has always been that something will be on the last game of the season. Luton have already sold out their allocation, so they've already sold out their 4,500 that we were given to them as Coventry out for next Saturday. So you know, it really is building to a fantastic crescendo, and what a place to be. Whether you're fighting at the bottom or you're fighting at the top, you can't beat that accelerant, that excitement, that adrenaline flow. In some ways, I'm pleased we're not mid-table mediocrity with nothing to play for. It's great waking up in the morning knowing that we've got a brilliant match tomorrow and there's something on it.
With the maybe not unexpected, but maybe a bit unexpected place on the table.
Yeah.
What are your plans for next season? And do you maybe have two in place, like one if you get promoted and one if you stay in League Two?
Yeah, we've just done our budgets for next year. So we've got Scenario A and Scenario B. Obviously, if we get promoted, then our income stream is higher. So in terms of the funds that we get from EFL, the sponsorship, the away support, etc., etc., it's worth more money to us, so the manager will have more money to spend on players next season. So we've run two scenarios. We have to. So everything is geared towards promotion, because we think positively here. We have to. We can't prepare to fail. So we're hoping that we can get promoted. So that's scenario B. Scenario A. Scenario B is if we don't, we're still here.
You've offered many incentives this season, including like free student tickets and reimbursing fans away travel costs, but probably the most prosperous was the two for crew. Why have you put these offers on and have they achieved what you wanted them to achieve?
Yes and no, in terms of achievement. The time will tell in terms of the long term. I don't think we've got enough evidence or done enough of it in order to capture the what we're hoping is going to be the new breed of supporter. So whether these are students who are here for 3 years who support Hartlepool normally or whoever, so we want to try and bring those down for a temporary 3 years and then become Notts County supporters. But the long term plan of the two for crew and our brilliant Generation 8 programme that we've been running with year 3 8-year olds at school is to build the next collection of Notts County supporters for the long term. I don't think it's any secret that our average age is probably 10 years older than what the average age of a
a supporter is a Forest. You know, it is an ageing supporter base. One of the legacies that I've got to leave is we have to develop and encourage and try and build that next lot of supporters. Two for Crewe was immensely successful. We had 17,500 here. We may be slightly disappointed that some of those haven't come back in the numbers that we would have liked, but it was unfortunate that the next series of home games, the weather was pretty rubbish. You know, one of them it was just very cold, one of them it was lashing with rain, and the last one it was at the snowstorms. If we would have perhaps run that in May or June, and we had three or four matches in July and August, I think we would have had a completely different set of results. I still don't understand why football isn't playing more in the summer. I really don't, especially kids' football. There's 10,000 kids that play football in Nottingham between the ages of 8 and 14 on a Saturday morning, 10,000 every weekend. So we dress them up in leggings and waterproof tops and Vaseline all over them and send them out to play in -3 conditions. And then just as the sun comes out and the grass starts growing and the weather turns and it's lovely and sunny, it's the end of the season. It's a nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. I can't wait for the winter break. You know, they're talking about it being from 1st of February to the 3rd week in February. Brilliant. You know, for me, I would run it from after the New Year's Day games. So 2nd of January, run it to the middle of February. Let's break for 6 weeks. And let's, instead of finishing on the 5th of May, we'll finish in the middle of June when the kids break up for school holidays. Perfect. It's not rocket science, that one.
Talking about trying to get more fans in, you're very active on social media. Why do you think it's important to have an online presence and be in direct contact with the fans?
I think after this week I might have changed my mind.
Yes! It's finally got through to me.
What's really important, and I've said this from day one, that Notts County is a sleeping giant, absolute sleeping giant, but the first thing we have to do is to re-engage with the local communities and the local businesses. So the business in terms of sponsorship and corporate tables and stuff like that. We've got a restaurant here that can take 450 people. It takes a lot to sell that out every week when you're selling it in tables of twos. It's much easier when you sell them in tables of tens and twelves, and that income from the businesses is vital. Likewise, we've got to get people through the gates, and we've got to build the momentum and the energy through the supporters. What social media allows me to do is one is connect with them, and secondly, it gives me brilliant feedback. I see social media as two fronts. One, engaging with the football supporter who perhaps don't go to games. So what the website does and what Nick does brilliantly through the club website and the club Twitter is it's selling to a converted audience. So I would imagine that 99% of the people that read the club website and receive the club tweets are Notts County supporters who come to games. My job is to reach out to the ones that aren't coming to games, or the ones that would perhaps watch Forest on one week and us on the next week, so like the floating supporters. The second part, it gives me a barometer of what the atmosphere is like out there. It was no surprise that it was really volatile this week, but it was only for Monday, Tuesday morning, and I could sense a shift Tuesday afternoon and Wednesday. It's almost like people have got over it. Yes, we were disappointed. Yes, we was upset. Yes, we were frustrated. Yes, we felt let down. But then they started looking forward to the game on Friday. And that barometer is really important for when we then start releasing stuff from the club. There's no point us sending stuff out to our fans on a Monday when they're all really upset, because it'll just fall on deaf ears. But once we can start seeing the tide starting to turn, people getting over that disappointment, and then people starting to look forward to the game, then we can start sending them stuff that's going to help them and start getting them in the right place and set up for the game on Friday.
So Notts County have an impressive history and are obviously the oldest football league club. Do you see your visions for the club as a way to replicate past successes, or do you see this time as like a new venture and a new era for the club?
Well, our strapline, which you'll no doubt see on lots of stuff
Nick will tell you. Nick knows Astrap, man.
Unrivaled history, incredible future.
So that's what we aim for. It's a nod to the history, because yes, it is unrivaled. It's unrivaled in terms of there's only one oldest football league club in the world, and we've had great success in the past. Okay, we haven't won 2 European Cups, but we've represented ourselves in the top league at the time. Our history is unrivaled, but this is a new journey. This is about us creating our place in history. This is about us going on the journey and what the future looks like. So we're building a new training ground very shortly. I want that training ground to be a beacon of light for that area. The preferred option the area is going into is quite a deprived area, and I want the training ground to be a beacon of light in that area, that the community will really be inspired by what we're doing. And that's our job, is to inspire the next lot of generation, whether that's 8-year-olds or unemployed or people who are in difficulty in life generally. This is a place that they come and be inspired. It's where they can enjoy the time here. It's not about just what happens between 2:59 and 4:45. It's the whole journey. It's being part of the football club, enjoying what we're doing and getting excited on the journey that we're in. So our job is to inspire people.
So with things like that, do you see how vital is Notts County in the community, and how far is it more than just a football club?
It's massive. It's absolutely massive in the community. FITC, football in the community, do a fantastic job, not in football. The work they do is incredible around the hospitals, working with cancer patients, working with people with dementia. They do phenomenal work. And the players themselves have just clocked up their 300th visit for the season. So collectively as a group, they've been out 300 times into the community. That's one of the highest in any of the football league clubs, because they've bought into what we need to do, which is they have a responsibility. They're not just here just to play football, go out there, earn their wages and go home. They have to play their part in the community. We're more than just an organisation. We have to be an organisation that is working and inspiring people.
Talking about social media, where do you see your position in the club like moving forward? Because a lot of football chairmen choose to take a back seat and basically disappear after they like acquire a club. And there's people like you who choose to be like the face of Notts County. If County move up the leagues, do you see it changing at all?
Well, that depends on how much influence our media manager has, of course.
None whatsoever.
I'd like to. Karen Brady wrote an interesting piece in the paper last week, and she was saying that there ought to be new laws that get bought out for people who basically just go on social media to insult. What frustrates me is I see social media and Twitter in particular as almost like being in a bar. So it's having some banter with your supporters. So what you wouldn't do in a bar, and what's not acceptable, is to walk up to somebody and headbutt them. And that's what it feels like a little bit on Twitter, when somebody just comes out with a tirade of abuse. Because it's just gratuitous violence, it shouldn't be acceptable. So I'm following Karen Brady's lead on that. But likewise, if you are somebody who is part of the club and is leading it, then the fans have to have a place to vent. They have to have somewhere that says, that performance wasn't acceptable. And I'm happy to take that on the chin, because as long as it's said in the right way, without the threats and the foul language that gets associated with that, you'll see. I've responded several times this week and said, I absolutely agree with you, and I have no problem. I have absolutely no problem with the fans booing the players at the end of the game last week, and lots of people have gone, oh, I'm really surprised about that. But fans they're there to be entertained. They're paying good money. They're taking a Sunday afternoon off away from their families, and they have a right to to expect the players to perform to a certain level. And if they don't feel that they've achieved that level due to effort, then they have a right to say so. As long as it doesn't get nasty and they start spitting and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's the world is changing. You know, we're in the middle of a technological revolution. We've all got to get on board the fact that social media is very much here to stay. And I don't think that somebody in my position can hide and say, you know what, I'm disappearing from it. And I'm not going to listen to that feedback. And I think I have even though I may not like it, I think I have a duty to be there and to be accessible. Doesn't mean I can respond to everybody, but I certainly read most.
Do you think it can be quite dangerous? Because obviously for a lot of people it's a knee-jerk reaction. It's very easy to just type a few lines and send that off. And how do you, I don't know if compartmentalise is the right word, but how do you separate this stuff and be like, okay, this is just someone that's very mad, or this is something?
Yeah, I think that comes with experience of being on Twitter and sensing whether somebody is in the moment just venting, or whether they're genuinely making some good points. And some of them I feel sorry for, you know, because they're very passionate about their football team. You know, it's their life and soul. And you know, your first question when we started this piece was what surprised me the most. And I think one of the biggest surprises are how much this football club means to a lot of people. You know, it really is their life. You know, I'm a football fan for sure, but it's never consumed me like it does consume some of our fans, and I'm sure that passion and that consummation is in lots of people at Forest and Man United, etc., etc. But I've never experienced that before, and all my friends and family and whatever all follow football, and I've got some friends who are season ticket holders at Forest, but they're not as their life doesn't depend on the success of Notts County. And there's a lot of people whose life does depend on the success of Notts County. And, you know, come Thursday, after the loss on Saturday, some of them are still in a bad place. And you know, we have a duty to acknowledge that and respect it. And we have a duty to work with them. And, OK, some people, you know, may well call me arrogant and conceited and etc., etc., and that's fine, I've no problem with that. But I think there's also a lot of people who have moved their position who used to be very abusive, and they're no longer abusive because I've said, you know what, I'm not putting up with that, and that's not acceptable. So if you want to engage with me, then it has to be in the right language, in the right way. And they've gone, yeah, you're right, sorry about that. In the main, 98% of people who are on Twitter, you know, with me, are absolutely great. I have a duty to be accessible.
How different is it to only Ilkeston? How different is what is the difference between two clubs, obviously in very different positions?
I was at Ilkeston last Saturday for their game. They are so close to promotion. They're currently second. And they should get promotion although there's no automatic promotion for second place, but we've been told that if we do end up second due to the size of the crowds we've got, we got 1,700 people at Ilkeston last week. Mm-hmm. That is more than what some League Two sides are getting. Yeah. And they're in tier six. You know, that's a phenomenal number of people. So you know, you talk about passion of Notts County. I walked around the ground last week, and some of those people, it's all about Ilkeston Town, you know, and they're just a team that are in Tier 6, but they just love Ilkeston Town and have followed them for years and years, like people follow Notts County. And so in terms of their fall from grace, it's significantly further than from Notts County. Notts County has gone from today's Premier League down to League Two, which is three divisions. Ilkeston have gone from Conference down to Tier Six, which is about eight divisions. So their fall has been further, and therefore the journey can be so much more rewarding and greater for them. So it's a great story, Ilkeston. It hasn't got the numbers in terms of the swell of people, but it's still got the passionate supporters, and it's still got a coaching team, and it's still got players who really want to drive success through that business. that will never make money. I think that's the difference. You know, a professional football club should be at least breaking even, because it's a business and it has to. Where an amateur football club is very much run on the help of volunteers, and will always make a loss. My job is to make sure the loss isn't too great.
Some interesting points there then from Alan Hardy at Notts County. Now, just onto some more talking points on the pitch. We spoke to Shola Amiobi at the press conference prior to the Colchester game. Shola shed a bit of light on his future after this season. Of course, in the twilight of his career, the future very much up in the air for the veteran former Newcastle striker. He's debating whether to stay on another year at Notts County or go into coaching, but here's what he said at the press conference last week.
It's a tough one. You know, I think my mind wants to. We just have to see, obviously, where we're at the end of the season. I've always said that I will take stock at the end of every season, give myself a couple of weeks to just mull over, think about it, and see if I'm good to go. So at this point in time, this is not a yes or no. But what I do know is I still want to, you know, I'm still fully involved. I still want to help this team do. Make sort of history, and I think obviously if we do that, that would definitely sort of make the job easier in terms of deciding. You know, it's probably not so much, you know, the tiredness and whatnot. It's just, you know, the recovery that changes. You know, the older you get, it just takes longer to recover, and that's what, you know, I've had a couple of niggles this season that, you know, in other seasons I probably wouldn't have had, just because the body wasn't recovered enough to go again. But the one good thing is I've picked up again. I've sort of sorted all those niggles out, and I feel as strong as I did at the start of the season. And I think that definitely is testament to, because I put a lot of hard work in, and that's what sometimes gets to you. You know, you have to put so much more work in the older you get. But like I said, I still love, I've always loved working hard and doing the right things, and hopefully that translates on the pitch. But it definitely does get harder, but I still, like I said, I'm still passionate about the game, and I still want to give it my all. There are a few different things that I've done in recent years that are sort of putting stuff in place just in case, like obviously my coaching badges, and, you know, I've done a bit of media stuff as well. But I don't actually think that far ahead when it comes to my career. I like to live in the moment, and I think that's why it's important for us as a team. You know, I keep on stressing in the dressing room that we have to just live for the game that's around the corner. Not get too stressed about, you know, if we're up or down. You have to be in the moment to be able to really give your all. And I think I've always been like that. It might certainly, you know, coming to the back end of my career, you know, even though I've put things in place that, you know, should, in case I want to go into different things. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a footballer. That's what I love doing. That's what I've always loved. And I think it would be wrong of me not to give my everything to what I'm doing right now. So, to answer your question, I haven't actually put any that much thought into what I want next.
Interesting stuff there from Shola. Obviously, you can understand his position, understand his kind of worry about, you know, staying on and, you know, not pushing himself too hard at the latter end of his career. But would you say that, you know, there's still a bit left in the tank for him?
I don't think so. To be honest, if you look at his goal return for the season and the wages that he's probably picking up, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I think you could probably get a much better return in terms of goals for that sort of money. As much as he is, as we've seen personally, as much as he is a good influence for a lot of people around the ground because of his presence, because of his experience, and, you know, he's an ex-England international, you know, over 260 Premier League appearances. Despite that, I still think you can go elsewhere and get probably a 20 goal striker like a Billy Key for the money that you would pay to Shola Amiobi per week. So I would like to see him hang it up, because as good as he has been in certain occasions for the season, it's been about 75% not good, and 25% he's performed at. And when you're trying to get promotions and win titles, and next season hopefully trying to stay in League One, I think you need a bit more than what he's brung to this team this season.
36, 37 years old, he's definitely getting on a bit. But you know, obviously the point of comparison is Alan Smith was in that team. The fact that he's still playing as well, and similar questions haven't actually been asked at the end of the season regarding his future at the club. I mean, Schöler's obviously that battering ram type of striker now, you know, a lack of pace, but certainly a lot of strength up there that a younger, sort of more sprightly, of course, Mason Bennett would have filled that role really well despite his injury and despite going back to Derby County. But it's that striker that's, you know, a bit of a whippersnapper, that's going to get 20 goals a season, that kind of striker, which would really fit the bill. I think
it's what they're crying out for, and I know Lee Hughes years ago didn't have bags of pace, but he did have a good turn of foot and could get away from centre half and really punish them on the break. And when, if you're a team and you come in to play Notts County, or Notts County are coming to play you know that you can sort of leave two on two at the back, even if it's Dead and Amiobi, because the fullbacks will get back to catch them because they don't have the pace. And from what I've seen this season, neither of them have the fitness really required, especially for League One, because this is League Two football we've been talking about at the moment. And when they end after the hour mark, if they both started, you see them like looking at the bench for like just trying to catch Nolan's eye contact to say, yeah, I need to get off now. But I think Nolan is sort of believes in them more than he believes in himself, that they believe in themselves at the moment, because he's eager for them to stay on because he thinks he can get a late winner out of them. But as you've seen, Forte has come into the team, and if we broke it down, I think it would be quite staggering as how many Forte scored in the last week compared to how long it's taken Schöler and Johnstead to score that many.
Now just onto some more highlights from the press conferences over the last couple of weeks at Meadow Lane. Kevin Nolan was quizzed after a rumour surfaced on Twitter that Joey Barton might be heading to Meadow Lane. Of course, his future today was confirmed that he's the new Fleetwood Town manager. But here's what he had to say about his good friend Joey.
Joey's a top player, a top lad. I've really got on well with him. You know, I think he describes himself as Joey on the pitch and Joseph off it, and that is very much like it. But I get on with both of them, and I respect both of them very highly. I think from my point of view, he's probably going to want to play at a higher level still, and if that doesn't sort of come to fruition, I'm sure that there'll be a conversation between me and him, no matter what, in the summer, because we speak regularly anyway. There'll be a conversation with us, and if we can get a deal done, then we can. If not, we wish him well, but I'll always speak to him, we'll always be in touch. So it's one of them. Let's just see what happens and see what comes of it.
Interesting stuff there upon Joey Barton. It would have been something very special if he was to come to Meadow Lane at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think if you know some of the names that have been linked with Notts County, and if you threw Liam Noble into the mix as well, Joey Barton, Niall Ranger, with Kevin Nolan under the stewardship, it would have been quite a dressing room.
Certainly would. Bit of a pensioners club going on there in the Notts County dressing room. Now, just onto some more highlights from the press conferences. We also spoke to Lewis Alessandra and Matty Virtue in recent weeks. Matty Virtue, we had words with ahead of this weekend's game against Yeovil Town.
Pretty much a different sport compared to under-23 football, but no, I'm enjoying it. It's good playing in front of proper crowds and passionate fans. I'm really liking that part of it. It's just playing against experienced players who know the league, and they're men, really. They're not boys. They know how to play. They know how to win. And there's so much is on winning. Obviously, that winning feeling is unbelievable. But also, this point of losing is a lot more amplified, say, than 23 football. It feels massively more real, especially if the fans play a big part in that. You know, there's probably more pressure on the games than in 23's football. But that's all part of the learning experience of going out on loan, really. And I'm enjoying that massively.
Do you think it's been a worthwhile experience?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially to come here, and it's a great set of lads, and in a promotion push as well. It always helps, positive results, and I'm learning, and that's the biggest thing. There's probably a lot more physical contact than in 23's football. Probably know their way around more, and it's all just part of getting used to that and showing that you can compete and sort of survive in this in this environment.
And getting stick from opposition fans and all.
Yeah, definitely. That's there's only ever home fans really, or kids in 23s games, so the proper fans is a big learning experience.
Matty Virtue's been kind of in and out of the side a little bit. He's had a few more games under his belt recently, but do you think he's had the kind of impact that people expected him to? You know, a youngster from Liverpool, you know, a lot of potential, but given that Ryan Yates, of course, left in January, hasn't really sort of, you know, filled the boots of him, I suppose. I mean, he might not have been brought in for that purpose necessarily, but he hasn't really, you know, stamped his authority quite on the Notts County team.
Yeah, and the real shame is that he's the type of player that would probably have really shone if he still had Ryan Yates next to him. He's not a replacement for Ryan Yates because he's a lot of different player. I mean, they both work hard, they are both quite industrial, but Matty Virtue is a really creative player and likes to have the freedom to roam forward and spray the ball about, and he scores quite a lot of goals with the Liverpool development squad. When I look at him, he will go back to Liverpool. He will have a good career in football, I'm sure, but I don't think his characteristics, if you like, were suitable for the job at hand after Yates lost. But as Alan Hardy told us earlier, you know, he has made mistakes, so has Kevin Nolan. It's all learning from it. But I think what's happened now in recent weeks is when he started to put a few good performances together, Matty Virtue was sort of got a lot of the fans off his back, who were sort of scapegoating him for a lot of things going wrong when Nolan started playing 4-3-3 just after January. But as we said then, it was just a combination of too many new things happening at once, with a three-man midfield of Noble, Virtue and Noor Hosin, who of course didn't even know each other 3 weeks ago, but were now the centre of Notts County's midfield.
So just looking at the potential playoff contenders then in League 2, of course Exeter sitting in 4th position currently, Notts in 5th, Lincoln City in 6th, and then Coventry occupying 7th place. Lincoln City look to be one of the more likely potential opponents for Notts County, which of course would be quite a game, and there have been quite some interesting encounters this season against their local rivals. Coventry, of course, occupying that 7th position as well, may just creep up a notch as well come the last three games of the season. Liam, just looking at that list, who would you, if you were Kevin Nolan, be most sort of wanting to face going into the playoffs?
I know it's a frustrating home game against Exeter, but away from home they really did take it to them and give them a good beating. So I think Exeter City would be the one they'd like to face in the semis, just to get down for the Wembley, and then of course imagine the great television of Lincoln City versus Notts County in the playoff final at Wembley, the Cowley brothers versus Kevin Nolan. It'd be great TV, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I've got to agree there. I mean, the away game that Notts had against Lincoln City sort of midway through the season, you know, 2,000 travelling supporters, a fantastic day, a really great atmosphere down at Simpsall Bank. So that kind of would be magnified, of course, if it was to be played at Wembley as well. And no doubt both teams, I mean, were both very relatively, you know, strong fan bases for League 2 as well. Would
massive,
definitely bring
yeah.
down a very big crowd to London if it was to be a playoff final. I think Exeter could prove very tricky opponents. They've obviously, you know, were flying at the start of the season, tailed off a little bit, but now have come back in earnest at this point in the campaign. So there's no easy game for Kevin Nolan and his team. We spoke to him about his playoff predictions and ahead of the game against Yeovil Town this week.
It's about keeping them standards now, you know, and not letting them slip, and making sure that we do what's needed for Saturday to keep this winning run going.
How much are you keeping an eye on all the other games that are going on at the moment? Because there's a lot of midweek games in the mix.
Well, Norm went to watch Lincoln and Wickham during the week, but you know that was off his own back. That wasn't me sending him or me sending anyone else. I don't think we've got that to that part of the season. We know what everyone's going to be throwing at us, whether the season's extended. We know what everyone's going to be throwing at us, whether we win all our games. So for me, it's just about making sure that we apply ourselves from now till May the 5th. And the next one in front of us is Yeovil. It's going to be a tough one. I thought we were very unlucky not to come away with 3 points that night after going 1-0 up, you know, for a referee not to give another penalty, which would have, you know, you say these, but when you're getting given them opportunities, you're 2-0 up away from home, you know, you think differently. And so for me, there's been just so many little major incidents like that which have affected us all season long, but we can't sort of spew on that now. What we've got to do is make sure that we look forward to what's going to be another hopefully good game and hopefully a winning one again.
Are you the type of manager that does go out and about and watch other teams, or because some managers do and some managers don't?
Yeah, no, I've watched probably a handful of games all season long. We don't get the time, to be quite honest. I mean Tomo and Norm, they love the game, you know. For me, sometimes I think it's better for me sometimes just to be able to try and mentally switch off as well as, you know, physically, you know, taking time away. Because it literally is 24 hours a day, you know, and I think we had a sort of chat with Norm and Tomo earlier on in the season. They said that I'll have to start taking a few more days away because I'm, you know, normally it's them who have the days, but I'm in with them. So, but I love it, and even when I'm at home, you know, it's always at the back of your mind, even when you're with the kids and you're out and doing things. It's the, you know, still there. And so, but that's why I wanted to get involved in it, and I wanted to stay in it, and that's why, you know, I'll hopefully just try and get better at it, and I'll manage my time better at it. But at this moment in time, I think, yeah, we've got more things right than wrong, and we'll learn from what we've done in the first 18 months and hopefully get better for moving forward.
I know you're not one to be studying the league table all the time, but you must have glanced at it, and if not, who is glancing at it, and what do you make of the table at the minute?
Well, we all know the boss will be glancing at it. He's 24/7, isn't he? And, you know, he's infectious. He's been brilliant since he's come in. So, and he's Twitter mad. So, you know, I'm sure he's getting all the messages. He's getting all of them. But for me, I think it's just about us in the next game. You know, what are we on? 73 points, I think it is. If we can get to 76 by the end of Saturday, then, you know, you're looking at it and seeing where everybody else is. But apart from that, you know, I want to be on 76 points come 5 o'clock Saturday. And we want to put them under as much pressure as we possibly can. We know that. But most of all, we want to make sure that we finish the season off strong and in a good manner.
You think 76 points, I mean, that pretty much does it, doesn't it? It only comes down to probably goal difference then, or are you still expecting it to come down to that last day?
I don't know, what's 8th on?
8th are on, what, 67?
67, yeah, 67. So open then that one at the 8th or whatever, is on 67 comes Saturday and we're on 76, because that'll hopefully take a few points, well, put us in a good sense of, well, a good mind set, if you like, because we know that no matter what, we're going to have playoffs unless disaster strikes. But look, these, like I said, you know, a while back, it'll only all matter on May the 5th, because we'll know our fate then. We won't know that probably, because we'll probably move up and down the playoff places. You know, we could sneak into third. You never know if you win all three and other teams, you know, do, you know, have a bit of a blip. So there's so many outcomes, there's no point in looking at it, because you could just look at it all different ways. All we've got to do is just keep winning, and what we want to do is keep winning, because we want to finish the season strong as we started it. We started it very strongly after a real poor away day at Coventry. We had a fantastic run, and that's what we want to do again.
What do you think of the teams around you then, in and about the playoffs at the moment? You've got Lincoln, Mansfield, Coventry, Exeter, Swindon might, they're starting to fade by the looks of things, in Exeter as well. How'd you rate them?
Well, good sides, you know, who's caused us problems. You know, Exeter thought played us really well here, after us being really strong at their place this season, one of our best away performances. And then all the rest, you know, Lincoln always, you know, they're full of energy, you know, they're horrible to play against, you know, it's not the greatest spectacle, but when you're at their place, the fans are great. They get behind the team. They, you know, they're riding the crest of a wave, and they've done really well. So fair play to them. But you know, the thing is, I don't really take too much notice. I'm looking at the Oval, because you know, the Oval are the team we've got in 48 hours, and we've got to make sure that we're ready for them, and that my players are prepared and ready to go.
I'm Les Brad, and I'm Notts County's all-time high goals scorer, and you're listening to Over the Trent.
So I think really Grimsby, going away to Grimsby Town, and they're in a relegation dogfight, really. Just two places off the bottom, and Barnet and with Barnet and Chesterfield occupying the bottom two, you'd hope that they would get something against Swindon to sort of confirm their safe and results to go their way, and Barnet to slip up again, which would confirm their safety, which would make Notts' job a lot easier going there. And then on the other hand, you hope that Luton are already promoted by the time that they come to play Notts. And just having a quick look at the table, a win for Luton on the weekend will do it. They'll be confirmed as well. So fingers crossed results can go their way this weekend, and it'll make those last two games sort of dead rubbers for the opposition, which will hopefully give Notts that advantage they need to wrap it up, really. And I mean, if they get 9 points out of the last three games, then they are probably still just going to be in playoffs. So they'll just be looking at Yeovil as a must win.
Now we're going to move matters over the Trent then to Nottingham Forest. Firstly, we're going to play you an interview I did with Elliot Stanley from the Nottingham Forest Supporters Trust earlier this month about the allegations and concern regarding Evangelos Marinakis and potential rumours of drug trafficking and bribery and betting scandals.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce and you're listening to Over the Trent podcast.
So I'm joined here with Elliot Stanley from the Nottingham Forest Supporters Trust. Now, Elliot, what's your take on the recent sort of legal controversies and the cases in Greece surrounding your club's owner, Evangelos Marinakis?
I guess for me, really, I sort of defer to what Nicholas Randall said for a number of reasons, really. Firstly, he has a far better legal mind than I do, and clearly his background gives him much more authority to speak. As chairman of the club, he's also speaking in an official capacity. And I think if you look at the points that he's raised about both the legacy allegations that were dropped this week and the new allegations that have come to light, I think he makes a number of very telling points. Also clarifies a number of things. I think there's certain media reports that are a little bit inaccurate. So on that basis, and also I'm in a very privileged position in that I been able to speak to Nick on a number of occasions, and therefore not only trust him because of his background, but trust him because of the way he's been when I've spoken to him, and you know, I trust him implicitly, and everything that he's put in that letter for me should be peace of mind for a number of people across the board, not just supporters of the club, but the authorities in this country, the people that oversee the competitions that we're involved in.
And I suppose the initial action, as a reaction from a lot of Nottingham Forest fans as well, is one of sort of concern and worry because of what's come before, you know, with all the controversies surrounding Fawaz al-Hassawi and his 5-year tenure at the City Ground. You know, no doubt that the current owner and the current chairman will be, you know, having that in mind, and no doubt sort of be looking to get away from that theme as much as possible as well.
Yeah, and I think they appreciate that, and it's unfortunate, and I guess some of this is understandable why a number of our supporters would feel that way. It's understandable why we'd perhaps be damaged by some of what's happened in the past, but at the same time we have to remember that these aren't the old regime, and what's gone before has gone, and this is a completely new regime. That said, people should be judged on actions, and they are very, very keen to be judged on actions, and I know that there's sometimes perhaps criticism that they're not as vocal about we're doing this or we're doing that, but I know from conversations that I've had that they are very keen to take action and then be judged on that action. So if you look at the things that they've done for the football club so far, that's the approach they've taken. You know, Nick talks in his letter to fans about some of the things that are in the pipeline, and I have no doubt that they will be things that supporters will look at and say, these guys are taking the football club forward. It will be in no doubt in the very near future that they are here to stay.
Well, we, in fact, just going back to the legal cases surrounding Marinakis, we, in fact, contacted the Nottingham Forest press office on Monday with regard to the drug allegation, the drug-related allegations, and they were, you know, refusing to comment on the issue. But, you know, I suppose it is good from a fan perspective to get that clarity from Randall's letter. But, you know, the cases like this, you know, must concern a lot of fans.
Yeah, and you have to think about the context of what's involved, and people hear headlines. You know, we live in a society that is ruled by, up until recently, 146 character tweets, and you know, we live in a society that kind of lives off titbits, and therefore people hear the headlines and look at drug smuggling and look at things like that and think, you know, this must be a disaster. I think Nick's acted swiftly in making the comments that he's made, but he's acted in completely good faith, and therefore you can't do anything but take that on face value. You know, he wouldn't have said those things, and I know he wouldn't have said those things if he doesn't absolutely believe them. That is a statement from the man himself, saying that he took the chairmanship of this football club because he believes in Mr. Marinakis. He wouldn't go as far as he's gone if he didn't still believe that.
You know Mr. Randall very, very well indeed, but for a lot of supporters that might not know him so well, you can appreciate their concern, can't you, over the, you know, the news that's been reported over the last week?
I can, and actually that's a lot of where we're trying to take the communication between us and the club, and therefore us and our members and us and the fans of the football club, because I absolutely recognise that I'm in an incredibly privileged position as a fan of the club to be able to sit and look in the eyes of Nick and take away comfort that the club's in good hands. And I absolutely recognise that not everybody, and very few people actually, are in the position to be able to do that. And I completely understand anybody that is fearful for the future of the football club based on what's gone before, and also based on what's been in the media recently, and it's difficult to preach patience. It's difficult to preach just give it some time, because people have done that, and they've done that over and over, and if we're truthful, the football club's been mismanaged for many, many years, more than just the last 5 years.
So that was Elliot Stanley there from the Forest Supporters Trust. Now, moving on to things on the pitch, Forest kind of don't really have anything to play for at this stage of the season. Liam, 49 points in 17th place, 11 points clear of the relegation zone in the Sky Bet Championship. Nothing really kind of left to play for apart from pride and building to next season on the agenda of Aitor Karanka and his players. But some interesting results nonetheless in the last couple of games, particularly, Liam, that 2-1 victory against Ipswich Town, which kind of, you know, was really much needed after a succession of, you know, results that were sort of a little bit off the pace, really. I mean, it was three defeats in a row against Millwall, Middlesbrough and Brentford. That last minute winner as well from Joe Lolley was fantastic.
Yeah, and it, you know, after the Derby game and going back even as far as the Norwich match, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight games that Forest failed to score in, and they broke their club record for time without a goal. And yeah, it's just been, I feel a bit sorry for the fans, because it's just like fizzled out the season. And Gary Rowett was quite right after the East Midlands Derby when he said this is Forest's last big game of the season, because there's not a lot to get excited about. And I think that's probably gone into the players who've, you know, they've lost 2-0 to Millwall, 2-0 to Middlesbrough, then I say a late goal to Brentford at home, but with the Ipswich Town win, I do honestly believe that they've just run into a team that's worse than them, because Mick McCarthy's walked out that week. That dressing room's obviously in turmoil, and they've still nearly lost the game. It's two late goals that has salvaged it. So I honestly think in the summer this squad is going to be massively overhauled, because you look up and down, it's probably one of the worst squads left in the Championship.
Yeah, despite Karanka's, you know, massive pool of players that he has to choose from, you're right, it's kind of also almost the dead weight from a succession of managers at the City Ground. Do you think that's kind of the key factor here, Liam? The fact that we've seen, you know, this downturn of form at this stage in the season for Forest, and the fact that it's kind of symbolic of the fact that this is a very much a long-term issue that's been present at the City Ground, and, you know, a manager just needs time.
Yeah, of course, and you are right, it is deadwood offset from previous managers. I mean, now in the summer, Jason Cummins will come back, a few other, George Grant's going to come back, Ryan Yates is going to come back, and you look at the midfield players that Karanka has signed, and he's brought in Ben Watson, Jack Colback, maybe coming on a permanent deal, and Liam Bridcut's there now as well, and he was a Warburton signing, and it's just, nothing seems to be going in the same direction, because you've brought in the experience of Ben Watson and Jack Colback, but then you've got, like I said, George Grant and Ryan Yates coming back in the squad, Jason Cummins, and then you've still got Barry Mackay, so you've got Scottish in the team that Warburton obviously fancied, but it's not Karanka's team at the moment, despite what he's done. And I think Tomlin's going to stay with Cardiff or go elsewhere. I don't think he'll be back at Forest, and I don't think he's been good enough either since his loan move. He had a couple of games at the start of the move that were really good, and to be honest, that's probably just a novelty thing.
Obviously, the defence on the pitch is the kind of ongoing issue. I mean, with the arrival of Tobias Figueiredo, that's kind of somewhat solved the issue in the centre-back position, but still this kind of flirtation with the wing-back system, you know, as opposed to sort of a more rigid at the back with Danny Fox, who's kind of moved into more of a centre-back position over the last couple of weeks as well. Just, you know, it's crying out for stability, really, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. And Figueiredo, I'd just like to add, I've read on sources that have told me that his loan deal had a clause in that if he made 11 appearances or more, there was the option to buy at €2.3 million, which I think is an absolute steal for Forest. Having seen him play, he's composed on the ball, and this he's a hard tackler, good decision making, he's a leader amongst men, and this is without being able to speak the language. So he's only going to grow as he gets more comfortable in the division as well, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see Tobias Figueiredo going for a considerable amount of money to a top team in a few years, because he's come from Sporting Lisbon at the age of 21, and the impression I got from Sporting Lisbon fans when discussing him with them was that it was just an issue of manager didn't fancy him, nothing wrong with his talent or ability.
Yeah, and of course very much needed alongside Joe Worrall, another kind of apprentice, if you like, at the centre of defence, who's got a lot of potential but needs that stability alongside him. Now, of course, other issues across the pitch, really, and, you know, Brent Brereton and his diving as well has kind of come to surface in recent weeks as well. What do you make of that, Liam?
I think he is probably feeling the pressure of being an 18-year-old and having the weight of Nottingham on his shoulders, really, because he's been the bright light in the team for, well, the one they've looked to, and he hasn't really delivered the goods. So the thing is with his diving is that my view on diving is that it is a problem within the game, but Ben Brereton's problem is that he can't dive. He makes it obvious, and a lot of fans are saying that we need to just learn how to dive and win the free kicks without making it so apparent what he's doing. But he'll learn his lesson in the end, because the yellow cards all mount up, and I'm sure like when he does it, the rest of the dressing room were almost embarrassed because he's doing it so often and so blatantly. So I think he'll grow out of it. He's a young striker, he's learning the trade, but it's a bit worrying because they've relied on him for so long now, it's almost becoming damaging to him.
Tendai Adeyemi and also Joe Lolley were in attendance prior to games against Brentford and this weekend against Cardiff City.
Yeah, I think, you know, happiness and relief. You know, it's been a bit of a bad spell for us the last few games, so to sort of get out of that, come back, especially with two late goals and to get a win, it was massive for all of us. And yeah, I think it showed in the players' celebrations, and yeah, I think we enjoyed it. We tried to not let it affect us, but of course, when you haven't scored in, I think, five or six games, it does start to play on everyone's minds. And I think in the last, I think through those games, we've created chances, we've hit the bar, we've hit the post, we've missed clear-cut chances. So it wasn't as such that we weren't creating the opportunities, which would be more worrying. But yeah, so for the ball to finally get into the back of the net, it was a relief. And I think hopefully now we can kick on. As the game went on, we did the post as well, in that game, and you know, we missed a few chances, and you do start to think, is it another day when we just can't score? But thankfully, we're off that try spell now, and hopefully before the end of the season we can score a lot more.
I think he's done great. I think to come over at such a young age from a foreign country, he doesn't really speak the language too much. It's a tough league as well, so to come in and play the way he has, it's a credit to himself as a professional and as a person, really. He's still working on his English, and we try and help him every day at training and stuff like that, but I think at the minute his football's doing the talking for him, and hopefully it can continue.
Hi, I'm Darren Fletcher, and you're listening to URN Sport.
And just looking at the running as well, Barnsley, Bristol City and Bolton as well, kind of dead rubber sort of some of those games. Of course, Bristol City kind of just sort of fading away of the playoff places right now, Bolton kind of struggling a little bit but probably gonna get to safety, as similarly can be said for Barnsley as well. You know, it's very much a case of, you know, building for next season. What would you sort of be saying to your players, and what sort of tactics and selection tactics would you be employing if you were Aitor Karanka going into the last couple of games?
Show me that you deserve to be here next season, I think it'll be his motto, because a lot of them haven't done that. And after the exodus in January, I think a lot of those players know that they're time is probably up, and the games that they've got remaining, as you say, you feel like Barnsley will probably drag Birmingham back down into it, and maybe save by the time that they come around to play. But that'll be an interesting game because it's a bit of a rivalry, of course, as well. And yeah, it's going to peter out, and it's going to be one of those seasons to forget once again, where it's been mediocre at best, and there's been not a lot to shout about really, except highlight of the season will be the FA Cup win against Arsenal, you have to say.
And over the summer, just looking ahead sort of to the horizon, of course, what sort of transfer policy are you going to be employing? If you're Vitor Kuranko, are you going to be, you know, looking to certain areas to strength? Is there going to be, as you briefly mentioned earlier, Liam, a massive overhaul of the squad?
I imagine so, because I think, like you said earlier, there's a lot of dead wood left in the squad from previous regimes, and I think Kuranko, being the type of manager that he is, he's very pragmatic. He'll sit down and work out where he can get the most gains and where he can offload players to, you know, keep under the wage bracket and things like that, and probably look to sell who he's not interested in, and I think there'll be a few big buys. So what I mean by a big buys is somebody of a stature of a Jordan Rhodes coming in, or something like that, or a big Championship name or an ex-Premier League name coming down, because I think with Karanka at the helm, Forest and the directors at Forest do really fancy the now is the time to push on and push for promotion.
Well, we spoke to the Nottingham Forest manager this week and in previous weeks over the Easter period.
Is your priority in the summer to bring a few strikers here?
Football and success is about goals. So you can create every single game 3-4 chances, and the way that we've been creating, and if you don't score, it's impossible to win. So now at least we have that organisation, and now the following season, adding more quality and more goals in the squad, everything will be easier. But again, now I'm pleased because with the 10 players who arrived in February, the work that they've done has been really good in terms of organisation, and now we look like a proper team, and we accept the Millwall game. I think the rest of the games we've had the chances to score.
Some of those players you signed, some have come on loan. How many can you keep, and can you tell us who you will be keeping?
I would like to keep all of them because the commitment that they've had since they arrived has been amazing. So it's difficult sometimes for them when they know that they're going to leave in 2 or 3 weeks, and they are still training really well. The players who are playing are playing really well. They're really committed with the club. But again, they are not our players, and we need to deal with their clubs. But again, now is not today, because I would say the last day, but it's time to say thanks to them, because they've done really well.
We know you've got these 4 games to go, which are still important, but how big a summer is this for you and Nottingham Forest?
I think it's vital, because we need to keep progressing. If we want to progress, we need to work a lot. So in my calendar this season, I don't think the World Holidays exist. So I need to work. I've been 10 months without working, so it's not a problem for me, but it's true that we have to change a few things.
And what do you want to change? How many players do you need? What are your targets in the summer?
I will tell you in the same way that I did when we changed everything in January. I think now we have the big picture, but now the first day, the first week that I could start working in the following season has been this week. So now we will have meetings with the club, and we will try to close the squad as soon as possible, because I know how difficult Championship is, and how important for us to start the season together can be.
That's it for this week on Over the Trent. Do stay tuned to our future episodes between now and the end of the season. Of course, that could go so many ways with Notts County and their quest for promotion via the playoffs in Sky Bet League 2. I'm Joe Tanner. Liam Kenny has also joined me in this episode of Over the Trent. Do check out our Twitter account as well, at Over the Trent Pod, for all the latest from the press conferences, for match day predictions, and for all the latest news and things on Twitter regarding your local football teams, Nottingham Forest and Notts County. We hope you listen to us again very, very soon.
I'm Alan Hardy, and you're listening to URN Sport.